lessons. We've learned a lot. For you, Sarah, we're talking about, it's a series of learning how to be content. It comes from Philippians 4, and Paul talks about, starting in Philippians 4, that if we're anxious, we need to give everything to him. We pray about it. Then we completely cleanse our mind with things that are pure and honorable. But then he talks about learning to be content. And that all I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me is concerning about contentment. So we're talking about the passage where he says, I have learned to be content in a little, but I've learned to be content in a lot. And we haven't really thought about being content in a lot. Being content in a lot should be easy, but it's not, because it gets us thinking that we're something more than we are. And these are lessons that we need to learn for being full. Full just simply means God has dealt with us abundantly. If we have food to eat today and we have clothing to wear, it looks like everybody has clothing, and I have a place to sleep, everything else is abundance. So you look at your house and wow, abundance, 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 abundance. I mean, we have abundance. We need to learn to live in abundance. So if you've ever gone through a financial struggle, you can probably relate to that uncontrolled feeling of worry or discontentment where you wonder how this is all going to work out. That would probably be earlier in our life. You're waiting for it to be resolved. God is so patient with us, and when we finally come to our spiritual senses, we realize that he is the one that truly takes care of us. During that process, we learn some things that help us realize that if this ever happens again, I'm going to trust him more. And I'm going to trust him more. And hopefully, in our older age, we are able to trust him more because he's been so faithful in the past. Well, our author believes there are lessons to be learned also when we have an abundance. And until we learn these lessons, we can't truly be content in having an abundance. And it's just really interesting to think about that. But all his points he brought up, and I just came up with 10 because I summarized some of them together. It's really interesting that we cannot be content with our wealth. As we share in God's blessing of giving us an abundance, we need to think on these 10 points to keep proper perspective of what we have. First thing that he mentioned in his book was God is the source where all good things come from, and I put physically and spiritually. You know, we may work hard and we get paid for it, and that allows us to purchase many things. But God is the one who enabled us to think, and this is where my mind kind of kept going, and you'll see what I mean by that, to be able to have healthy bodies to do what needs to be done, and then gives us the right circumstance to get that employment and to keep the job in the location of where you made the money, etc., etc., etc. If we continue to break it down, we realize God enabled us to have all of that. We may think we happened to apply for the job at the right time. We may think that I'd had a really good interview and that's why I got the job. When you really break it down, God enabled you to have that job. God enabled you to make that money. And in our cases, you had jobs. A lot of us had jobs, and now Social Security's paying for things, and we still have a lot of money, and we need to use it to God's glory. Hebrews 13:6, so that we can confidently say, the Lord is my helper, I will not be afraid. What will man do to me? He's the source of all good things. But I think it's really interesting if you read verse 5 of Hebrews 13. It's in the context of money. Make sure that your character is free from the love of money, being content with what you have. For he himself said, I will never desert you, nor will I ever forsake you. So the context of this is, I don't want to love my money because I'm the one that ultimately takes care of you. I can have all these riches, but I'm the one that ultimately takes care of you. The very rich person has to also say, you know, the Lord is my helper. I won't be afraid. we all have certain amount of money, but we need to understand he will never desert us, or he will never forsake us. Anything in our lives that meets our needs and even makes us joyful and content is from God. Everything. James 1:17 says, every good thing given and every perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of lights. This verse comes right after talking about the danger of letting sin go unchecked. It interrupts the thought that what does come from God is not sin, but only good things and perfect things. MacArthur says that the perfect, flawless, holy goodness of God results in his doing and giving only what reflects his perfect holiness and truth. His works reflect his character. So when you think of our abundance, he gives us what we need to reflect his perfect holiness and truth. And when we give, and when he gives us abundance, we are getting a lot to reflect his character. Well, how can I reflect his character with my abundance? I mean, we've been told we need to use our money to God's glory. Well, what does that mean? Turn to 1 Timothy 6. It's very clear, and you've read this passage before, but there's several things in this passage that will be profitable to us to remember that when we have riches, this is what we need to do, and this is the attitude we need to have. 1 Timothy 6 says, instruct those who are rich in this present world. What's the first thing? Not to be conceited. Now, why would a rich person be conceited?
Thinking they did it on their own.
They think they did it on their own. This is what we're talking about. Nothing you have has anything to do with what you did. I mean, yes, you earned it. But the bottom line is, everything is God. So the first thing he's saying, if you're a believer, don't be conceited about it. Or, what else are you not to do? Fix your hope on the uncertainty of riches. So you have all this money, and you think, I can kick back. It's saying, don't fix your hope on this. So he already is saying, don't be conceited that you got it. But it says, I'm telling you, I don't care how much money you have, I can blow it away. And we're going to go to a really neat passage in Haggai that I just love. But uncertainty of riches. God calls our riches uncertain. But on God, who richly supplies us with all things to enjoy. The bottom line is, if you have a lot of money, you've got some things that you have to take care of in your mind. I can't be conceited thinking I got it, and I can't rely on it. This is not reliable. But we have to rely on God, and he's the one who richly supplies us with all things to enjoy. Verse 18 continues. Now we need to talk to each other. We need to instruct each other. Instruct them to do good. Well, I do good. I do good. To be rich in good works. Rich means abundant. I need to be rich in good works. I need to do good, be rich in good works, to be generous. When someone wants to give this, you need to give more. Be generous with it. Why should I be generous with it?
Because it belongs to him.
It belongs to him. And who's going to richly supply you? My bank account?
No.
No. So if we're generous, this is what he tells us to do with it. And ready to share. It seems like all those are this kind of the same, but they're not, because he got specific with specific things. Be rich in good work. Do good. Be rich in good works. Be generous and ready to share. I see a need. Boom. I'm going to get on it. Be generous. Looking in this classroom, there's extremely generous people in this classroom. I'm talking to the choir, but I'm saying press on, keep doing it, keep realizing that your riches are getting stored up in heaven. Oh, that's the next verse. Storing up for themselves the treasure of a good foundation for the future, so that they may take hold of that which is life indeed. There's 169 times where God says he provides. in the Bible. It's kind of, you know, it's a different context, but our God provides for us. And he provides certain amounts for each person, and we are to be held accountable for those things. So understand that every good gift is from the Lord, and he has specific things that he wants us to learn and to do. Second point, we must fear God. Any comments on that right off the bat?
On number two.
On number one. I'm sorry, number one. I'll move on. You can think, we can talk about it.
I didn't know that the more you give, the more you have. I don't know how that works.
God blesses you richly.
He will give you everything in abundance. The more you are generous. And that doesn't mean what Tyler and I were talking about. We're not stupid. We don't want to be a burden on, I don't want to be a burden on my boys. And so I gave everything away, gave the house away, gave everything. You guys got, I got to move into your basement. No, that's not what he means. But I think a true believer will know how to spend that wisely. And which gives you more joy. I mean, the true believer, it's so fun to meet a need and know that the Lord, and if you have that attitude, you're on the right path. I'm just saying, you dear ladies, press on. All right, we must fear God. Okay, why in having an abundance do I need to fear God? And in relation to having abundance, we have a tendency not to rely on the Almighty God. And really, not intentionally, but we get in the mindset of thinking we have everything handled now. I've got the right 401k over here. I've got enough in the savings. If this happens, I've got... And then we get to a point where do I need God in all this? We have to understand that we don't want to get to a point where we don't need God. The intensity of the fear of God has left. And we need to be reminded how valuable putting God in his proper place is. I want you to turn to Ecclesiastes because I want you to see that. But I'll read you Hebrews 12:28. Therefore, since we receive a kingdom which cannot be shaken, let us show gratitude. Here we go again. Gratitude. By which we may offer to God an acceptable service with reverence and awe. This is the kind of fear of God we're talking about. Reverence and awe. For our God is a consuming fire. This is a pretty serious God we're talking about. As we go through life, we need to be thankful. And anything we do needs to be done with an attitude of reverence and awe. Because he's pretty mighty. Ecclesiastes 5. Sally, are you there?
Yes.
Will you read 1 and 2?
Guard your steps as you go to the house of God and draw near to listen rather than to offer the sacrifice of fools, for they do not know what they are doing evil. Do not be hasty in word or impulsive in thought to bring up a matter in the presence of God. Sorry. For God is in heaven and you are on the earth. Therefore, let your words be few.
It's just a reminder that this is a pretty awesome and mighty God that we are serving. And we don't want to flippantly come toward him, to him. It says, you know, he cares for us and he loves us and he wants us to bring everything to him. But we need to give him the proper reverence and awe that he deserves. Make sure we think through the requests and realize this is an amazing God we have. He wants us to draw near to him, but he also must be reverenced. But we need to realize, too, with the proper reverence comes personal advantages. You know, when we put God in his proper place, there's good advantages. Turn to Proverbs. We're going to just look at these five Proverbs of what is the advantages of fearing God. It is a commandment, and we need to do it, but there's such advantages to fearing God. Proverbs 1:7. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. So, class, what's the advantage of fearing the Lord in this passage? We're going to get wisdom. Really? If I fear God, we're going to get wisdom. Proverbs 8:13. The fear of the Lord is to hate evil, pride, and arrogance, and the evil way and the perverted mouth I hate. What is the advantage of fearing the Lord? What will that help us with?
We won't be boastful,
we won't be prideful, and we're going to hate what God hates. I'm going to hate evil. That's the advantage. Proverbs 9:10. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. So the advantage of fearing the Lord is you get
wisdom and understanding.
Now, how's that different than than Proverbs 1:7, beginning of knowledge. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, and then it says the beginning of the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. What's the difference? Is there any difference?
Actually, wisdom is how to apply knowledge.
That's how I see it.
Yeah.
You got to begin. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. But also, as you fear the Lord, you're going to be able to wisely apply that knowledge to your life and to the situations you're in. I think many times I think of Bible verses when I see how people are acting or how I'm acting. I'm applying that knowledge that I've learned. You just don't want to be sedentary. Sediment? I'm so sorry.
Sedentary.
So don't try to understand what I'm saying. All right, Proverbs 15:6. Better is a little with the fear of the Lord than great treasure and turmoil in it. That's interesting because we're talking about abundance. 15:16. What did I say? Oh, you're right. Thank you. Proverbs 15:16. So better is just having the fear of the Lord than a lot of money and turmoil. Wow. That's how valuable it is. This shows us that having abundance is no fun where there's turmoil. It's better not to have much than the fear of the Lord. And then the last one, the fear of the Lord, Proverbs 19:23. The fear of the Lord leads to life, so that one may sleep satisfied, untouched by evil. What's the advantage of the fear of the Lord with that one?
Good night's sleep.
And it leads to life. It gives us purpose. So there's advantages. We think of fear of the Lord as just reverencing and being in awe of our great God, which is what we need to do every day. That's what thankfulness does. That those simple things like Deb saying, I'm just thankful that I could sit outside in the warm sun. It makes us love our God with the reverence and awe because he can take that away. All right. Any thoughts on that so far? On fearing God? And this is all in the context of our abundance. And I fear that when we have an abundance, we just don't fear God like we should because I've got everything taken care of. There's nothing better than not having enough money at the end of the month and knowing, Lord, I trust you to take care of this. Help me to use my money wisely so I can take care of this. We just have to trust him. And we just lose that passion of trusting God and then seeing him work. So
dependence
goes hand in hand with that. Yeah, and they don't. When you have an abundance, you don't see that you're still dependent. And if you don't see it, he's going to show you. The scary thing is, what if he doesn't show you? Wonder if you're not a believer. You know, all those things go through your mind. So, all right, onward. Jesus should be exalted. He holds the earth together and gives me my every breath. Jesus, who we celebrate being my personal sacrifice, and we're celebrating that this week, for eternal life, is the very one who holds this world together along with giving me my every breath. Colossians 1:15-17. You haven't read it? Go ahead.
He is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of all creation. For by him all things were created, both in the heavens and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or rulers or authorities. All things have been created through him and for him. He is before all things, and in him all things hold together.
We just talked about fearing God, but look at the credentials for Jesus. I mean, he was the creator of both heavens and earth. We just don't think of that because he humbled himself and came as a man. We study him as a man on this earth. But look at his credentials of who this God is in the form of Jesus. What an incredible, humiliating thing he had to do coming to earth. To be obedient to his Father, to be the sacrifice. That's the only way that you and I, not being Jews, can get to heaven. So we need to be thankful. And I love 17. He is before all things, and in him all things hold together. I just wonder, you know, it's got to be the planets going around the sun, and he can go, beep! we're out of here, we're frozen, you know, we're done. And, you know, it's just, when you think of the rotation of the planets, and what if we got off a little bit? What if the tilt was, you know, we'd all be dead. Or what if we were on Mercury? Or, you know, just all these things. God created us to deal with temperatures that we can handle here, you know. It's crazy. All things to be thankful for. So Jesus is not only God the creator, but also God through Jesus Christ, the mediator, who preserves the world. The world would otherwise fall into confusion. This is in light of my abundance, and it makes me realize in a moment my abundance and my very life could be gone in an instant. Luke 12 is a great story. You all know it, but we're going to read it. Judy, you got it?
Yes.
Let's go 13 through, I think, 21.
Through 21?
Yes, please.
Someone in the crowd said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the family inheritance with me." But he said to him, "Man, who appointed me the judge or arbitrator over you?" Then he said to them, "Beware and be on your guard against every form of greed, for not even when one has an abundance does his life consist of his possessions." And he told them a parable, saying, "The land of a rich man was very productive, and he began reasoning to himself, saying, 'What shall I do, since I have no place to store my crops?' Then he said, 'This is what I will do. I will tear down my barns and build larger ones, and there I will store all my grain and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, you may have many goods laid up for many years to come. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry.' But God said to him, 'You fool, this very night your soul is required of you. And now who will own what you have prepared? So is the man who stores up treasure for himself and is not rich. God.'"
I don't know if there's any passage that's more straightforward than that. This guy was working hard. I'm sure he was a hard worker. He was planning ahead. And in the whole soul process, God says, "It's time for you to die. What have you done for me? Oh, I was preparing. I was building. I was being very productive." But I love that line in the middle and toward the end of verse 15 that says, "For not even when one has an abundance does his life consist of his possessions." It's just throughout the Bible. It's not about what we have. It's about how we use it. And he says, what does God say about someone, that hard worker? What did he say about it?
"You fool."
"You fool." He calls him a fool. Well, he worked hard. You used it. I gave this to you, and you did not use it correctly.
Just look at how often the word "I" appears.
Right.
I did this.
And that's key too, in realizing God gave this to me. But see, if you have that mentality that God gave it to you, I think you'll be more willing to share. Mm-hmm. It's not yours. And we're going to talk about stewardship in a little bit here. So very cool. And the best way to do that is realize I am unworthy. And that's the next point. We need to understand our unworthiness. And I think we all can agree we're unworthy. But do we live like we're unworthy? Do we really understand that I'm nothing? When we have more than we need, we have a tendency to think pretty highly of ourselves, just like the example of the Luke passage we just read. Our accomplishments and our wealth. When we biblically view what we have in light of who we are, we will start seeing ourselves as so unworthy and so grateful for his grace in our lives. And what I did was I was just kind of Googling unworthiness, and I really liked these four examples of godly men in the Bible that stated how unworthy they were. And I'll just read them. Peter, in Luke 5:8, this is when God was seeking his disciples, and Peter was fishing and couldn't get any fish, and God says, just throw it on the other side. Peter's reaction was, but when Simon Peter saw that, he fell down at Jesus' feet saying, I want to follow you. Is that what he said, do you think? He said, go away from me, Lord, for I am a sinful man. He knew who he was. He was unworthy of this. Paul said in 1 Corinthians 15:9, for I am the least of the apostles and not fit to be called an apostle because I persecuted the church of God. If you want to be useful for the Lord, you have to understand you are nothing. You bring nothing to the table. John the Baptist in Matthew 3:11 says, as for me, I baptize you with water for repentance, but he who is coming after me is mightier than I, and I am not fit to remove his sandals. He will baptize you with the Holy Spirit and fire. Just all these great men acknowledging, I understand where I stand here. And then the centurion, Matthew 8:8, but the centurion said, Lord, I am not worthy for you to come under my roof, but just say the word and my servant will be healed. So understanding, when we come before the Lord, the physical abundance doesn't matter. It's amazing that I can be called worthy to be in his kingdom forever. And until God can use us, we have to realize we bring nothing to the table. I am unworthy. Any other thoughts on point four? Point five, understanding the vanity of being confident in what we have and realize the uncertainty of it. I think we kind of touched on this when we got to 1 Timothy, but in 1 Timothy 6:17, that was part of the ones we read earlier, instruct those who are rich in this present world not to be conceited or fix their hope on the uncertainty of riches. You know, when people think I've got so much that even Warren Buffett probably thinks there's no way that I will ever not need something. But it's uncertain. And any stock market crash, or I always think of a physical weather disaster that could, I mean, it doesn't matter. Or just in general, your own health. All of a sudden you get cancer and you have 6 months to live. What are you going to do with your wealth then? So we may feel like we have a lot, but any particular problem that comes into your life could destroy you. I think medical bills, you know, sometimes medical bills can take the richest person and make them poor. And if we don't have the proper perspective on things, guess who intervenes? God. Turn to Haggai. Find that little book. I just love this. When I remember reading this in my daily reading, and I laughed out loud. I thought, wow, this is a great way to describe this. This was when, in the second year of Darius the king, on the first day of the sixth month, the word of the Lord came to the prophet Haggai, to Zerubbabel, the son of whoever that was, the governor of Judah, and to Joshua, the son of
Zerubbabel.
Thank you. The high priest saying, thus says the Lord of hosts, this people says, the time has not come, even the time for your house of the Lord to be rebuilt. He wanted his house of the Lord to be rebuilt. Then the word of the Lord came to Haggai, the prophet, saying, is it time for you yourselves to dwell in your paneled houses while this house lies desolate, the house of the Lord? Now, therefore, thus says the Lord of hosts, consider your ways. He said, you better think about this. You have sown much, but harvest little. You eat, but there's not enough to be satisfied. You drink, but there's not enough to become drunk. You put on clothing, but no one is warm enough. And he who earns wages to put into a purse with holes. Nothing is ever enough because you're not putting your priorities right. I will always cause you to not have enough. I think of this when it comes to car repairs or you know, that if something goes bad with a car and you don't have much money, the Lord provide. If you have your proper perspective on things, He always manages to provide. And He may provide through generosity of someone else. But God intervenes. He said, I'm going to put holes in your pockets if you don't get this right. So, and I love that. So if we don't view our wealth with the view of using it to glorify God, He will eventually make it work out so we have nothing for ourselves. And this goes for His children. So understand the vanity of being confident and understand that wealth is uncertain, especially if His true children are not using it correctly. I'll put holes in your pocket until you get it. Number 6.6, none of us own our own money. We have been given money by God to be a good steward of. Nice thought, but do we really think about that as we think through your money? No matter how I got the money, whether I worked hard for every penny or got a nice inheritance, our handling of it reveals if we truly understand that it is ours to manage for His glory. When you are a steward of something, the process goes like this. This is my master's money. He wants me to use it, but He wants to make sure He gets the credit. I am only managing it. This is not my money. This is my master's money. And at the end of the day, I have to report back to my master and how I spent the money. Do we think of our money that way? No, I earned it. I've got this and say, this is my God's money. Doesn't mean you have to give everything away. You just have to really ponder, Lord, pray about it. How should I use this? Is there a need? You know, this seems like an abundance right now. Is there a need I can meet? If not, I'll save it for a future need. It's His money that we are being good stewards of. Therefore, every time I'm given an abundance by my master, from the moment I get the money, I know that every line of every ledger will be looked at and judged by my master. And if I manage the money properly, He may give me even more to manage because I've been faithful. Now, this is very detailed and very, you know, master, but I think we just don't think of the money that we have in our accounts as something that is directly from God, and He's saying, okay, I'm going to see how you're going to spend this. How are you going to use this? It's a really good thought. All right, Luke 16 just talks a little bit about this, about our faithfulness with using what we have. Who wants to read that? Rita, you want to read it?
10 through 13.
10 through 13, thank you.
He who is faithful in a very little thing is faithful also in much. And he who is unrighteous in a very little thing is unrighteous also in much. Therefore, if you've not been faithful in the use of unrighteous wealth, who will entrust the true riches to you? And if you've not been faithful in the use of riches is another's, who will give you that which is your own? No servant can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else you will be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and wealth.
It's just a great reminder of we have to be faithful no matter what we have, whether it's riches. And then He will bless you, and He will bless you somehow. I don't know if it's physically or spiritually, but the true riches He will give you. The draw of our abundance to selfishly use it for ourselves is it's real and it's strong. We need to constantly remind ourselves, I have been given everything by my master. And I will give account for every cent that's been given to me. Use it with that in mind. Now, this doesn't mean we can't go on a trip or we can't do something with it that's fun or buy a new vehicle. But everything has to be with the mindset of, am I going to give God glory in this? You know, I think of even going to Israel, or, you know, that costs a lot of money to go to Israel for some people. For most of us, it's not, you know, it's God has blessed us. But if I can learn or I can serve or just keep all that in mind. All right, point number 7, we were created to work hard even when we have a lot. Why would He put that in there? Why does He not want us to be lazy? What happens when you become lazy?
You get lazier.
Well, you do. And then, you know, we were never, it's, you know, just like what Gil says all the time, we were never created to retire. we go slower as we get older, and we have to be useful in the realm that we have. But laziness is something that's never allowed. We can rest and we can refresh so we can get back on the horse, so to speak. We can work diligently to get the task done that God has set before you, and then rest and then get back at it. The word sluggard appears 14 times in the Proverbs and nowhere else in the Old Testament. Lazy is equivalent to being irresponsible. I thought that was an interesting definition. Lazy sounds okay. It's very equivalent when you read through these verses as being very irresponsible. That's a little more serious. Proverbs 6 through 11. Somebody want to read that fun little passage? Sally, go ahead.
Go to the ant, O sluggard, observe her ways and be wise, which, having no chief officer or ruler, prepares her food in the summer and gathers her provision in the harvest. How long will you lie down, O sluggard? When will you arise from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest. Your poverty will come in like a vagabond, and your need like an armed man.
And in the context of our lesson, who gave us all our money?
God.
What happened to this lazy man was he got lazy, and where did his money go? He lost it. He became poor. Do you think he's going to get rewarded for that in heaven? It's a serious one. I didn't do anything wrong with it. Well, you became lazy. That's why it's so important that we continue to be aware and work like the ant. The ant is an example of industry, diligence, and planning. And yet they appear to have no leader. I thought that was interesting. They have endurance. What happens when you kick an anthill down?
It comes back.
They don't stop working.
They keep working. No, they do.
They just build it.
No, just build it. And there's not ants going, really? You know, they're not mad. They don't stop working. They think, why did I? They just get right back to the work. I think that's really interesting because when you go to the ant hill, you just go, and then you watch them. Ah, they're going to get right back to it, and the next day it's there.
They got the ant hill back again.
Yeah. And we think, well, this isn't worth it. That's the Lord wants us to just be diligent for Him. So whenever you feel mean, knock over an anthill, and then watch them scurry.
Watch them build it back better.
That's true. But what a great example of endurance that this seems not worth it, and be diligent. And then Proverbs, I put a couple. I had like seven on here. We don't need all these, but Proverbs 13:4 says, "The soul of the sluggard craves and gets nothing, but the soul of the diligent is made fat." If you don't work, you're not gonna have much. And if everything I have is from the Lord, I want as much as I can so I can be generous with it. Proverbs 24 says, "The sluggard does not plow after the autumn, and so he begs during the harvest and has nothing." There's no question that laziness produces poverty. And then Proverbs 21:25, "The desire of the sluggard puts him to death, for his hands refuse to work." And then my favorite one that I didn't put in there is the one where the sluggard doesn't even puts his hand in the he doesn't even get it to him. You know, that's really, really lazy. Proverbs 24, let's read that. 30 through 34. Christy, you got that?
Yeah. "I passed by the field of the sluggard and by the vineyard of the man lacking sense. And behold, it was completely overgrown with thistles. Its surface was covered with nettles, and its stone wall was broken down. When I saw, I reflected upon it. I looked and received instruction. A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest. Then your poverty will come as a robber, and your want like an armed man."
I love the second line in there. Okay, past the field of a sluggard. How did he describe the sluggard? He lacks sense. He's not thinking. He's not being diligent. And we learn from that. You know, poverty will come upon you. And then the last one, Proverbs 26:14. I like this one too. As the door turns on its hinges, so does the slugger on his bed. I just don't want to get out. I know I'm supposed to get up and do this. Once again, I don't believe we have any sluggards in this room. But just a great warning. And this principle is for the ones that have plenty where they could sleep in. They've got plenty of money. All right, eighth lesson. Remember, spiritual riches are way more important than earthly or physical riches. We might be blessed with all these physical riches, but boy, spiritual riches, the growth in the Lord, to learn about Him, nothing more important. 1 Timothy 4:8. On the other hand, discipline yourself for the purpose of godliness. For bodily discipline is only of little profit, but godliness is profitable for all things, since it holds promise for the present life and also for the life to come. That's the key right now. If I am disciplining myself for bodily discipline, it's only for a little bit, and it doesn't matter as you get older. It just gets worse and worse, and there's no benefit in heaven. The godliness is profitable for not only the promise of this present life, but for the life to come. Everything we do for the Lord is going to get rewarded.
Verse 10 says, "For it is for this we labor and strive."
Right. Very good. Psalm 56, I just put that in there. As I was telling it to Twyla, I realized it has nothing to do with this. But I love this because David is the psalmist here, and he said, look at these guys, and they're coming after me. And then in verse 3, it says, when I'm afraid, I will put my trust in you, in God whose word I praise. In God I have put my trust. I shall not be afraid. What can mere man do to me? Okay, he's just talking in verse 1 and 2 about what mere man is doing. He's coming after me. He wants to kill me. And then in verse 5, he goes back to it. All day long, they distort my words, and they attack, they lurk, they watch my steps. And then verse 8, he goes back to it. But you have taken into account my wanderings. Put my tears in your bottle. And he says again at the end of verse 11, what can man do to me? So understand that the spiritual blessings, and the reason I made the connection was the spiritual blessings are how we are to attack our physical problems. This was a physical problem that David had. They were trying to kill him. He was genuinely scared. The spiritual riches are better than anything that could comfort him. I just like that psalm. So take it with a grain of salt. Keeping our spiritual heart rightly thinking will help us remember that the physical provisions we have are just an offshoot of the spiritual blessings we have. Point number 9. We are not to praise ourselves for our abundance. Well, that seems logical. But you know what? We have subtle ways that we can praise ourselves for our abundance. We may not say, ha, look at me and look at my house and look at... But we have subtle ways where we can kind of let people know that I have a lot. Proverbs 27:2 says, let another praise you and not your own mouth, a stranger and not your lips. We can get pretty good at praising ourselves with our own mouth and trying to make it sound humble. Continuing to keep the right perspective with our abundance is accomplished by guarding our heart and keeping it pure, and understanding that everything comes from the Lord. Matthew 15:18, you all know that, but the things that proceed out of the mouth come from the heart, and that's what defiles the man. And then it just goes on in 19 and says, for out of the heart comes evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, fornication, thefts, false witness, and slanders. Well, those things are physical and they come out of the mouth, but it says it comes out of the heart. You want to guard what you say? Guard your heart. Fill it with the right things. You don't have to worry about what comes out of your mouth. Guard your heart. And then God, point 10, God has set this time of your life as a time to prepare for eternity. Matthew 6, let's read that. Deb, when you get to it, can you read Matthew 6, 19 through 21?
Sure. 19 through 21. Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys and where thieves do not break in or steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. How far?
That's far enough. That really sums it up nicely, because we need to do things that matter in light of eternity. And where your treasure is, that's where your heart's going to be. If you treasure what you have, that's where your heart's going to be. And it just goes along with everything else. If we can get this aspect of our life right, that we understand that everything that we get as far as possessions is from the Lord, that will transfer us, all my time is from the Lord. The time I have left is from the Lord. Everything is from the Lord. Any blessings, the ray of sunshine, the not getting in the car accident. We just need to keep thinking that. Lord, thank you. Now, what do I need to do with this? If you get in that thankful mindset, you won't believe how your mind will change about things. And the Lord can work in your mind by showing you things. Well, let's end up with 2 Corinthians 5. Sally, it looks like you have it. Let's read 9 and 10.
Therefore, also we have as our ambition, whether at home or absent, to be pleasing to him. For we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, so that each one may be recompensed for his deeds in the body, according to what he has done, whether good bad.
I mean, we just need to keep that on our minds also, that, you know, everything, what our ambition is, whether we're at home or absent, is to be pleasing to him. And that includes our money. So just great lessons to learn for abundance, but it's just great lessons to be learned to live a godly life and your service. All right, thoughts and comments.
Good lessons to be learned, reminded of.
What one sticks out that you kind of had forgot about?
No, one that I struggle with, I think. Just don't puff yourself up. You're no better than anybody else.
Right.
Don't say little things that would be misconstrued as, or, you know, thought of as.
That I'm trying to exalt myself by tearing them down. Excellent. Boy, that's hard. But our sin nature is to exalt herself. So.
And a subtle way of doing that, when you first started that to the point, that so we I tend to think sometimes that people who don't have anything don't work. They're not working. If they worked harder, they'd be. And that's not.
No, that's not right.
That's not right.
Yeah.
We don't know their situation. We don't, and we just need to really guard our own thinking right. About mm-hmm. other people.
I always think the widow's mite with that.
Yeah.
Jesus really exalted her by what she didn't have hardly anything, mm-hmm. and she gave. She had the right attitude about that money, and she didn't have a lot.
I like number 6. I'm only managing God's money. And the importance of really praying before I purchase things.
Excellent.
Or how you want me to.
What's the reason I'm getting this? Mm-hmm. Excellent. That's a very good thought. Yeah. Is this something I need?
And we're accountable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah. We got to remember this, because I think people like what we read in Luke, you know, this hardworking guy was building storehouses and he had to tear them down and build bigger ones, and God called him a fool because he was only concerned about getting more and more and not thinking about how am I going to use this. So I challenge you, ladies. Myself included. Use it wisely, not selfishly. Go ahead and enjoy it. He did intend for us to enjoy it. So,
know, we do have an abundance right now, but the way the economy is going, I mean,
right.
It could be gone tomorrow. We got some of our investment papers today. Lots of money. And it could just keep going that way, and pretty soon you don't have.
Right. And it should not shake us, because God gave it to me. God can take it away. I love Job's response. The Lord giveth, the Lord taketh away. Blessed be the name. No matter what, blessed be the name of the Lord.
Well, because isn't that what happened to some of the people with the stock market crash?
Right.
They couldn't stand.
Yeah, they committed suicide. Yep.
Because their goods were more important.
Yeah. So it's good to keep that perspective. Mm-hmm. All right. Give Rita your prayer requests, and I'll end in prayer. Lord, thank you so much for the reminder, the serious reminder, that all these riches you have given us, and we have a lot in the United States, were given to us so we could manage for you with the sole purpose of using it to give you glory, whether that's meeting someone's need or purchasing something that will promote your gospel better, or something that we use, a vehicle that we buy so we can transport people, whatever it is, Lord. As Deb said, before we purchase things, we need to bring this to you. And boy, give us wisdom, because we don't know. We sometimes are so stupid about things. And I just pray that you'll give us wisdom to know, you know, I'm being selfish with this. Or no, this would be really useful to give you glory in how I use it. Help us especially to be shining examples to the young people in this body, that they see how we're using our money, they see how we're using our time, not for glorification, but that we would shift all glory to you with everything that we say and do. I just thank you that you've made us aware of this, and now help us to apply it to our lives so that we can just have a renewal of faith in you during tough times, and it could get worse, and knowing that the uncertainty of riches is a real thing. Thank you for being our sufficient God that will give us everything we need to be the people you want us to be for you. In your precious name, amen.